could hear this sound. With 21 correspondents in 7 countries from around the world, this is Bondi Tunes International.
In the UK, Ling Pang interviews people from all around the world, and she is Bondi Tunes International.
Bondi Tunes, playing all over the planet now.
This is Ling Pang for Bondi Tunes International, and I talked with Nick Van Eede of Cutting Crew, courtesy of Livewire. The band is best known for the song I Just Died in Your Arms, which was a massive hit in the 1980s. They are returning with a new album, Ransom, Heal, Restore, Forgiven. How are you, Nick?
Hi, Ling. I'm very well, thank you. Yes, despite all the dreadful things that are going on around us, I think we're surviving. We're looking after the old people in our family, and everything is good. Thank you.
Yes, we will get through this. You are a singer-songwriter of Cutting Crew and one of the founding members, together with Kevin McMichael, starting the band Cutting Crew back in the 80s. How did it start?
I was in another band called The Drivers. We were a British band, and we got signed to a Canadian label. So you can imagine a young Englishman suddenly living out in Canada and making, we had hit records actually. Whilst touring on the east coast of Canada, there was a band that supported us, and I'd never heard a guy play guitar like it before. And I said to him, if your band splits up and my band splits up, get on an aeroplane and come to England. And 2 years later he did, and in 1985 we formed Cutting Crew.
Did you imagine, both you and Kevin, the success that you guys achieved for just one song? You know the song I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Did you co-write the song together, or you are the sole writer of the song?
No, I wrote the song, yeah. He made it fantastic. I mean, his guitar playing is all over it, so you can hear the... whenever Cutting Crew wrote a song, it would be mainly my idea, my tune, my lyrics. But then Kevin would, put the most over the top.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be a beautiful thing. So, we knew we had something special right from the beginning.
Beautiful song. I love the song.
Thank you.
Absolutely love the song. This lovely song that put Cutting Crew on the map, I Just Died in Your Arms, becoming so successful, instantly recognized by the world. What inspired you to record this latest version with a full Philharmonic Orchestra version of the track?
Well, obviously, back in 86, we released it. It was our first single, so you can imagine how crazy it was to go from nothing to having a number one all around the world and America as well.
Mm-hmm.
As a young writer and singer, you know, it's your biggest dream come true.
Mm.
And I think that we kind of knew it was special. I mean, it's a special song, but also, as you know, Ling, you have to record it and make a special record.
Mm.
You know, everything has to come together at the same time. So, all of that was beautiful, and we loved every minute. But to be speaking 33 years later, and it now, I think it's got 5 million plays in America alone.
You mm-hmm.
know, it's just, I have to pinch myself some days. So it's been my passport. It's been my friend, that song, my bank manager. She's been many things. And then just last year, a record company got in touch with me and said they specifically record albums with orchestras. And ever since the very early days, you know, everybody from people like yourself or my mum even said that Cutting Crew songs would work so well with an orchestra. So when I was given the chance, we jumped at it.
Well, you have a beautiful voice though, Nick. Absolutely beautiful voice.
I'm lucky. My voice seems to have survived all the years. I don't do anything special. I drink a little whiskey before the show and I'll cross my fingers. So yeah, I'm very lucky, and I enjoyed singing these songs on the album.
You have a voice that people love.
Thank you. Also, I suppose it's quite distinctive. I think people recognize my voice, so that's a really lovely thing. Like when you hear Peter Gabriel sing, you know, he's Peter Gabriel. When you hear George Michael sing, it's only George Michael. Well, I'm not as famous as both of those people, but I am proud to have a voice that I think people recognize.
What are you saying? I looked on YouTube. This song, you got over 30, 40 million hits.
I know. I'm a. Yeah. So anyway, it's good. I wanted to tell you this story. I thought of this just this morning. I wanted to share with you.
Okay. Yes.
When you're a kid, you know, you the music business. There is no other business like the music business for the chance of the fairy story. You know, being discovered and going on to travel the world and possibly earn some money and meet beautiful people. Well, that's what the music business can do still. When I was a kid, I got that record deal, and then we had the hit record, which was great. But also, I'm now, it's 33 years later, to stand in front of an orchestra and sing my songs all those years later was, I cried my eyes out. It was a very emotional thing on some of the songs, because the lyrics change what they mean to you over the years.
Your new song comes with an album. It's got 11 tracks, and it's called Ransomed, Healed, Restored, Forgiven. How did you guys come up with this name? It's a very unusual name for an album, isn't it?
It is, and I think you read it beautifully.
Thank you.
When I was a kid, I used to go to church on a Sunday morning, and the very first music I ever really heard were hymns, and one of the songs was Praise My Soul, the King of Heaven. And it goes like this. Praise my soul, the King of Heaven. To his feet thy tribute bring. Ransomed, healed, restored, forgiven. And I can remember all those years ago, loving those four lines. Mm. And when you re-record songs from the past, I thought this fitted, because ransomed, well, they paid me a bit of money. healed and restored, well, that's what we hope we've done to the songs, and forgiven, hopefully you and the fans will forgive me for making changes to songs that are very special memories to people.
It's got beautiful songs in there called Overture, I Just Died in Your Arms. This is the classic normal length. And then the third song called I've Been in Love Before, and so on. Let's have this song, I Have Been in Love Before. these are all love songs?
Some of them. I would say half and half, yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a beautiful song on there called Everything But My Pride, which mm-hmm. will be the next single. And that was written with Kevin and myself. And he told me a story of a true story. He married his high school sweetheart. So he only ever went out with one girl from the age of 16. Mm. He told me a story that he married her after going out with her for 10 years. And he came home 2 weeks after the wedding. He came and put the key in the door and he heard a strange echo as he turned the lock, and he opened the door and everything had gone. She'd taken every piece of furniture, every light bulb, every curtain. And he told me this story. So I wrote the song with him called Everything. She took everything but my pride. And I think that's definitely a love song. Other songs on there that have nothing to do with love. Broadcast, big song that I sing just with the orchestra.
Broadcast, Any Color, Climb Abroad, Berlin in Winter. That's another unusual name, Berlin in Winter.
Yep. Cutting Crew played Berlin 2 days after the wall fell down in 1989. And so this is a fantasy story about a man who was forced to build the wall, and then he lived through all the dreadful times in the 60s and 70s, but then he lived long enough to be there that night when it fell.
So beautiful. Since the 80s, Cutting Crew have continued to be active on stage and writing music and performing. Is that correct?
Absolutely. When Kevin died, back in 15 years ago now, I took about 3 years off just because, you know, he was the main guy in the band. So so about 3 years off, but every year since we've been working, we've traveled. We played tours in Japan and Australia and Mexico, Canada. We're very lucky. We're very lucky, like you said earlier, because our name is now known all over the world. So we can travel and it's good. Very, very lucky.
It's your trademark, really. Cutting Crew, it's your label, isn't it?
Yeah, it's all mine. Yeah. What we do now, Ling, as you may have heard before, is with so many opportunities to play gigs all over the world. I actually have a Cutting Crew band in Germany. I have a Cutting Crew band in America. I have a Cutting Crew band in Australia. So whenever I play those shows, it's me and my guitarist Kevin, and then we pick up with the drummer and the keyboard player and the bass guitarist from those countries. And that's the economics, that's the new economics of rock and roll.
Besides all the familiar songs that Cutting Crew is associated with, have you guys ever done covers of songs of other artists that you admire?
Great question. I love that question. Yes, we do. We play a really good version of REM, The One I Love.
Oh, yes.
And we cut it in half and put it against the Rolling Stones' Play With Fire. And we play that as a reggae song. So the two songs mash together. It's a big favorite in the show. Yeah, big favorite.
A lot of musical band that I talk with, they're very, very creative. They think music has no boundary, and they would mix crossover with country and pop and this and that. Cutting Crew is also an example of that as well. You're blending a song with orchestras this time. You're not afraid to experiment musically.
No.
As long as it sounds good, you go for it.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it is to be brave. I think the fans love it. As long as the actual original song is good and strong, you know, the words and the melody are strong, you can take it anywhere you want. And the last album I made before this one was called Add to Favorites, and every single song was a tip of the hat to people that I loved. So one song is in the vein of Jackson Browne, another song is in the vein of Otis Redding. And I love it just keeps it fresh, and as I said, so long as the song is good, then you don't sound foolish.
Thank you for your time today. It's been lovely talking with you. Here's the track from Cutting Crew's new album, Ransomed, Healed, Restored, Forgiven. I Just Died in Your Arms.
Thank you.
For Bondline Tunes International, and I talked with Nick Van Eede of Cutting Crew.
Broadcasting on 13 stations around the world, wherever you are, we are never far away. This is the Bondi Tunes Radio Network.
You're listening to Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around the world. I'm Henry on Bondi Beach in Sydney, Australia. Melissa Grima is our correspondent for Victoria, but she's not in Melbourne where she lives. She's not in Wellington, New Zealand, where she spoke to us from last week. She's now on the Gold Coast in Queensland, and that's where she joins me from. Melissa, they used to have an old term called girl about town. You're kind of like girl about state, aren't you?
I feel like I'm girl about lockdown, to be honest.
Now, we spoke to you last week from New Zealand, where you were. You seem to be one step ahead of lockdowns from, like, I mean, obviously New Zealand wasn't locked down, but you kind of arrived one day before Brisbane and Queensland was going into a lockdown. Is that right?
Yes. So I tried to do as much research as possible before I flew into the Gold Coast. Spoke to my friends that lived here, checked out what was going on. I arrived, everything was fine. And then a friend in Sydney messaged me and said, oh, you're going into lockdown today. I was like, what? I had no idea. And the friends that I was staying with had no idea either.
So you hired a really plush kind of apartment, which you showed me pictures of. You went there on Tuesday this week?
I checked into the apartment on Sunday. We went into lockdown on Saturday, found out at midday on Saturday that we were going into lockdown at 4 p.m. Mm-hmm. And then I had to check into this apartment on the Sunday. When I arrived, the doorman wasn't very happy and gave me a lecture about moving around during COVID, but I was already on the Gold Coast, so it's not like I was leaving the area that I was in.
But you were in the same LGA, local government area,
yes,
as your friends.
Yes.
Right.
But I turned up with my suitcase and he looked at me and said, where have you come from? And I was very taken aback by the question.
Gosh.
If he had framed it in a different way, like, hi, I just wanted to ask, where have you come from? But he was very accusatory.
Bad,
you know.
Bad attitude.
Oh, totally, totally. But then I thought, if I'd come from overseas with a suitcase, they wouldn't have let me in without quarantining and I wouldn't have been allowed in from New South Wales. So, yeah, he could have framed it a bit better, but he looked at me very suspiciously and then gave me a lecture. And, I kind of just rolled my eyes because I get being vigilant, but then do it in the proper way.
Did you actually move in on the Sunday?
I did.
Okay. Now, you've got friends, and I know they've got children, mm-hmm. in the same local government area. Where are you now? Are you still in the apartment, or have you gone back? Because we have to explain, of course, that this lockdown was extended until the coming Sunday, and it may well be extended more. Where exactly are you?
Okay, so I arrived and I stayed with my friends because I haven't seen them for a while. Mm. But I got permission off my boss because I was on leave when I was in New Zealand, but I'm back at work this week. And so I didn't want to bother my friends working from home from their house. Mm. And so I hired this apartment out for a week.
Right.
And so I've been working every day. So the lockdown hasn't been as harsh because I actually have something to do and I'm quite busy. So that's okay.
And you're doing that from the apartment.
As
we record, you've got another 3 or 4 days before the lockdown lifts. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think they're going to extend the lockdown yet again? And if so, where are you going to go? What's going to happen?
I had a little bit of a moment today where I tried not to have a meltdown and think about it too much. Mm. Because one of the reasons I came here, I don't know if there were flights from Wellington to Melbourne at the time because Melbourne was in lockdown and I didn't want to go back to lockdown. Mm. So I flew here. I'm working this week. The plan was to fly from here to Darwin and take annual leave again.
Yes.
Next week. Can't do that at the moment. And we're supposed to be coming out of lockdown on Sunday. And they have said that people need to stay home. It's very interesting being in three different states and watching how the premiers react and talk to people.
Yes, indeed.
So I'm hoping that if Brisbane stays in lockdown, they'll at least let the Gold Coast and the Sunshine Coast out because to date there hasn't been any cases, but you know what it's like. No one can ever predict anything. My biggest fear is going home to Melbourne and having to do 14 days quarantine. And just the thought of that gave me some post-lockdown stress disorder.
Yes.
Because I just had flashbacks of, you know, my 8 months spent in that tiny apartment last year.
Yes.
And the thought of having to go back there and work for 2 weeks but not being allowed out of my front door, it's really not doing it for me. So I'm a little bit concerned. But at the same time, I'm trying not to let myself get worked up because these things are out of our control, as we know.
Yes. I want to talk about the fact that you live alone. You're in a small apartment in Melbourne. And you attempted many times to take a holiday. And I know we're rehashing what we talked about last week, but it's important. You really did try to take a holiday and you eventually did. And now you're stuck in near Brisbane on the Gold Coast.
Well, if we reverse a little bit, so I had a couple of attempts last year to go to Sydney, and each time I booked my flight, I had to cancel. So the first trip I had to cancel was Byron Bay. Then I had to cancel two different flights to Sydney. I eventually got to Sydney, and then Sydney had an outbreak, and I wasn't allowed to go back into Victoria. So my 10-day trip to Sydney extended out to almost 6 weeks. So then got back to Melbourne, attempted to go to Perth. We went into lockdown, couldn't go to Perth, managed to escape lockdown number 5 for Melbourne, and flew out to New Zealand a day earlier to escape that, only to fly into the Gold Coast and land into lockdown here. So I feel like it's that there's a movie called Final Destination where you can't cheat death. I feel like I can't cheat lockdown. Despite trying to.
Oh, sorry. My microphone was off. Oh, how weird. I'm trying to stop the cat from making so much noise in the background. Yes, you mentioned, you know, you had a moment today. A sense of distress, I imagine. Now, in Australia, we've got an organisation called Lifeline, which is a phone support group and is... had its busiest day in its history. It's overrun by people who are angry, not just distressed anymore, but angry after all this time. 3,345 calls in one day. They feel hopeless. These people feel hopeless, and the calls rose by 30% in Victoria, where you live. Have you ever used this? Do you ever need to use this kind of service?
I've never used it. With my work, I deal with a couple of healthcare providers, and the conversations I was having with them last year is that the people providing information over the phone are exhausted because they're in exactly the same situation.
Yes.
And they've got to talk to people on the phone who aren't doing so well when they're in the same boat as them. So it's been very difficult for the people on the other end of the phone as well to manage these calls, you know. But it's interesting because when I was in New Zealand, I had a friend from Melbourne call me, and she was absolutely crying during lockdown 5 because she just couldn't take it anymore. Mm. You know, we're kind of at, like, it's very hard in Melbourne, and I've just noticed today they've got another case in Melbourne. So you just really don't know what's going to happen anywhere you go.
Yeah.
You know?
And you mentioned, you know, you've always... You know, in the last couple of weeks, you've been talking about Darwin all the time, and you really don't know, as you say, you really don't know where you're going to be next. Do you still have Darwin as a plan, or are you going to try and get back directly to Melbourne?
I do have Darwin in my sights still, but we have to see what happens. Like, I really would like to avoid going home and doing 14 days quarantine. Like, just the thought of it and how it's making me feel, like... I don't want to do that. So what I would like to do is see what happens on Sunday, and then if we get out of quarantine here, maybe I spend another week working from the Gold Coast, and then I fly to Darwin on the weekend if that's possible.
Gosh, okay. So when you say that you might have to go into lockdown for 2 weeks, just give us an idea of what that means. You live alone, so you've got to get shopping. How does that work?
Right. So if I came in from what they term a red zone, and the Gold Coast is currently a red zone.
Yeah.
I have to go straight to my house and I have to self-isolate for 14 days. I don't know what that means in terms of getting from the airport to your house. Obviously, I don't have a car at the airport, so I'd have to get into an Uber. I don't know how they consider that and how they monitor that, but I would have to go to my apartment and I would have to get home delivery. And I also don't know how that would work because I live in an apartment with a locked gate.
Yes.
And delivery people can't come inside unless you go down and let them in.
That's very tricky, isn't it?
Well, it is very tricky because I do have one neighbour that I could get to assist me, but she's in the process of moving and I don't actually know if she's moved out or not. So, you know, that's difficult. I mean, I could get her to go to the store and leave things on my doorstep, but when it comes to getting deliveries in, that's going to be hard. I mean, fortunately, I'm a bit of a hoarder, being
someone
with a Mediterranean background. I do have a lot of, you know, food in my freezer and stuff that I've cooked from scratch. In my freezer, so I could be okay, but it's things like fresh milk.
You know, you represent thousands and thousands and thousands of people with these small sort of stories, and I don't mean to make them sound unimportant, but they're everyday life stories in this pandemic where you have these problems, and they're simplistic problems in the sense that you wouldn't think about this if there wasn't a pandemic, but food is, you know, it's so important, and you have to be able to get it, but you're not allowed to go to the shops. You talk about your neighbour. Maybe your neighbour's leaving. I mean, these kind of stories are stuff that we need to be talking about because they're everyday stories about life in lockdown. I just, by the way, if you just joined us, I'm talking with Melissa Grima, our correspondent, who is normally in Melbourne where she lives, but she's currently near Brisbane on the Gold Coast. How about this? I spoke to Adam in hour one of this show. Adam is our other correspondent in Melbourne. There's a brewery offering a slab of beer for anyone proving they have had the jab. Now, Adam doesn't agree with these incentives. Labour is supporting these incentives. What do you think about kind of bribing people to get the jab?
Well, we've been seeing this happening for the last several weeks. There was a pub in Melbourne that said that they were going to give people beer, and the food, the alcohol authority said, no, you can't give alcohol as an incentive. And Scott Morrison stepped in, who is the Prime Minister, and said, no, whatever it takes, let's go. And I believe Anthony Albanese, who was the leader of the opposition, said that we should be offering people $300 if they get the injection in their arm.
Yes.
I think it's very interesting.
I mean, nowadays, they do this in America, don't they, Melissa? I mean, this is big time in America, offering free pizza, all tickets to ball games, all that sort of stuff.
But don't they do this to parents in Australia as well? Don't they offer them a cash incentive for getting their children vaccinated at a young age?
I don't know.
Those vaccines are very different. But I do believe you get a cash payment. And, you know, happy to be corrected if I'm wrong on that, but there are incentives to get your child vaccinated. Look, it's a hot topic, and I can honestly say to you, Henry, that not a day has gone by when I haven't had at least one conversation about the vaccine, and I've had several today. This would be my fourth.
Yes.
Because people bring it up in regular conversation, and everyone wants to know whether you've had the jab or not. And depending on your answer...
Do you think it's any of their business?
I don't, to be honest.
I don't.
You know, do you want to know if I'm on birth control or if I've
had... Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, so, and you know, I've received an earful from friends when I told them my answer. You know, yeah, and there's so much controversy over it. And what I can't believe, and maybe I'm a little naive, but the amount of celebrities, like radio presenters, TV presenters, who are on the television and on the radio telling everyone to get the jab.
Yeah.
Who are these people?
Fed up with this.
Who are these people and how are they qualified to do it? You know, and today, what I found was really interesting. There's a case of someone in Cairns that has the Delta variant. Mm. Now, it's a pilot that was going out to a cargo ship. And he didn't bring it from Brisbane. He's got it in Cairns. But when they were reporting it on the news, they said, but he's been vaccinated. So it'll be really interesting to see if that Cairns cluster grows, even though the gentleman's been vaccinated, because the whole spiel is, if you don't get vaccinated, we're going to keep doing lockdown. And I've heard it from New South Wales, I've heard it from Queensland, I've heard it from Victoria, and I've heard it from Scott Morrison.
Well, you know what?
I'm sure you have too.
Yes, indeed I have. You know, when people ask me, there's a lot of people, you know, pushing other people to get vaccinated. I'm sick of listening to this rubbish in the media. My health is my business. And if anyone asks me if I've been vaccinated or not, I tell them my health is my business. I won't answer the question. I'm sick of being bullied by media and people like superstars and, you know, people who are famous. Who cares? You know, I don't understand why they're being used to tell us what to do. The government are enough, aren't they?
Well, look at dating apps like Bumble and Tinder.
Yes.
So in other countries, they have offered you free upgrades if you state on your profile whether you've been vaccinated or not. And
I
was on Bumble the other day and I was asked if I'd wanted to put a vaccination badge on my profile.
Yeah.
And
see where that's going? You know what's interesting, Melissa, is that, you know, the government keeps saying, oh, we're not going to enforce any of this where, you know, you have to prove that you're vaccinated. We don't do that. But yet again, or if you look at it in another way, they may say we're not going to enforce it, but the people who run restaurants and these places, they're putting it into their hands to, and they'll say you can come to this into this restaurant if you're vaccinated. So we're being forced one way or the other to do this.
So I frequent a dive bar in Melbourne called Cherry Bar, and they tout themselves as being the best rock and roll bar in the world. And it's a dirty, divey rock and roll bar, and I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
And a lot of you know, rock stars who, like Foo Fighters, will come and visit Cherry Bar after a gig in Melbourne, right? So it's a very well-known establishment. And the owner posed a question on Facebook last week and said, no vax, no entry. How do you feel about that? And there were so many replies, and I wrote that I was disappointed that a rock and roll bar was even asking that question, because it didn't feel very rock and roll and it was very divisive.
Yeah.
And I had over 250 people like my comment. But I read through, you know, some of the replies, and you know what? The responses were 50-50. Half the people said, no way would I go to your bar if you wanted to do that. And the other half were like, everyone should be vaccinated. So I found that very, very interesting. But the other thing as well, Henry, is Scott Morrison's been on the television saying, if 80% of the country isn't vaccinated, we're going to keep going into lockdowns. So we're being threatened that way as well.
Absolutely. And you know, quite frankly, I think with the abysmal, and if you're listening internationally, which most of you are, Australia is abysmal in terms of the amount of vaccinations that it's still less than 30%. It's pathetic, and we all know it's pathetic. And, you know, I don't know that we will reach that 80% by Christmas. Everyone uses Christmas as a benchmark.
Do we even have enough vaccines to reach 80% by then?
We sure as hell don't right now. You know,
that's right.
There is AstraZeneca. Not enough for the population. We've got 25 million people in this country. A lot of people are afraid of AstraZeneca, and they're waiting for Pfizer, which is really minimal at the moment. A massive botch up by the Prime Minister Scott Morrison in Australia. And a lot of Europe are looking at us and going, where did it all go wrong? Melissa, where did it all go wrong? Was it just not supplying the vaccine in time?
Henry, mm-hmm. whenever you deal with a government agency in Australia, like, you don't have a great experience. So, you know, the government, I hate to say it, but it's a bit of a joke, right?
Of course.
And the fact that Scott Morrison addressed the country, I think it was yesterday, right? Or Monday.
Yeah.
And he came out with this roadmap out of COVID. Right. Okay. So he's a great example of how Australian we are with being laid back and everything else. We love enforcing rules, but it takes time to put anything into place. And why are we coming out with a roadmap out in April 2021 when this has been around for 18 months?
Well,
why has it taken that long?
Well, it's actually August 2021.
What did I say? April, sorry, yes.
The thing is, there's two things about this. The roadmap should have been done, you're absolutely right, a year ago. And secondly, it's, you know, the Labour leader will say that it's too little too late. But I think that this roadmap is rubbish. I've looked at the massive PR campaign going on with the right-wing federal government here, and I just think you can make all the plans you like, but you got to start doing something. I mean, this has been the problem with Scott Morrison and his government. They keep talking. I mean, you know, Melissa, you may have seen this on Facebook. I put up this. Australian Prime Minister at a news conference today. For a lockdown to work, a lockdown has to work. What the hell does that mean? What does it mean?
Yeah, but here's the thing, Henry, right?
Mm.
We've all been patient as citizens and done the right thing. We did our lockdown the first time, right? And as Melbournians, we've been through it five times,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So we keep doing the same things, but we keep getting let down by the people in power. And someone made a comment on the radio the other day, and I thought it was, like, very telling. As a nation, we really band together when it comes to things like the Olympics. And we'll back any Australian. We'll do it for the Olympic Games. We'll do it in sports such as the rugby, the cricket. How is it that as states, we all turn on each other in terms of lockdowns and COVID?
It's a good point, and it's a political point. That's the point. It's political. We have a friendly rivalry here in Sydney with where you live in Melbourne. It's been around forever. We've got also a friendly rivalry with New Zealand, where you've been recently.
Yes.
And it's all friendly. And now it's nasty because of politics. You've got Gladys Berejiklian, who is the Premier of New South Wales, and Palaszczuk, can't think of her first name offhand, oh dear, Anastasia Palaszczuk. Yeah, and they're all bitching at each other, and when I say bitching, I'm not trying to be sexist, but because you've got the Premier, Daniel Andrews, bitching at them too. You know, it's become this political shit fight, basically.
Oh, and so last year when Daniel Andrews asked for, like, vaccines, additional vaccines for Victorians, Gladys said, no, you're not taking ours. And then when she needed it recently, she said, we need more. And Daniel Andrews said, well, no, we asked, you said no, so tit for tat.
Yes. Who wins? We don't. We the people.
No, but I also am unsure of why the doses of the vaccine have been diverted from people in certain age group to be given to year 12 students in Sydney.
Yeah.
What's that about? Mm. I have a question for you, Henry, if I can flip this around.
Sure.
So you're in Sydney and you're in Bondi where the Delta outbreak started. Mm-hmm. You initially went into this as a snap lockdown, and now you're in, what is it, your second month or is it your third?
I don't know.
Okay.
You sort of lose sense of time. I think it's the second month. Yeah.
Yes. So how do you feel about the way Gladys has handled it? Because from our perspective in Melbourne, we think she's been too lax. And the reason why your lockdown's carrying on is because she hasn't been forceful. How do you feel as a person from Sydney who's in this?
Interesting question and a good one. I know that there was a lot of support for her at the beginning of this over the year or whatever. I'm not talking about this particular time of this new lockdown. But, you know, a lot of people thought, you know, the reason she didn't keep New South Wales, didn't close it down, was because there was a political thing against Danny Andrews, the Premier of Victoria. She decided to keep Sydney largely open. And to be honest, I'm not just saying this because I'm talking to someone who's from Melbourne, but I actually didn't agree with her. You know, it's a bit selfish of me because I work from home anyway. This does not affect me. Really, it doesn't. I mean, I just can't visit people. But I think she should have done it faster, sooner, like Victoria did it. So that's my answer to you. And I think that she's sorry about it. I think she's privately sorry about it, but she's not really apologising about it. She kept business.
But are your shops still open in Bondi?
Yes. Oh, well, no. Only essential chemists and corner stores are still open, just essential buying, but we're basically on level 3 lockdown, I think it's called. But the thing is that you got to understand that, and you do understand that Victoria has a Labour government and mm-hmm. New South Wales has a Liberal government. Now, Liberal is right wing if you're listening in Europe. The thing about our Premier is that she can't go against the Prime Minister because he's the same party. It's all about money with the Liberal Party. And that's why she kept this open. And now I think we're suffering for that. And you're right, it did start in Bondi. And ironically, in the eastern suburbs of Sydney where I live, there's little or no no cases at all. It's all in the inner and outer, you know, southwest of Sydney, which you would know pretty well.
Yes. I mean, most of my family and friends are in, you know,
Liverpool,
the Blacktown LGA, Blacktown, where, you know, they've got stricter rules than everyone else. But I as a Melbournean, I don't understand why they didn't go hard from the very start.
Mm.
You know,
a lot of people don't understand that, you know.
Yes, I get what she was doing.
It's money.
I get what she was. Yes, but it's just going to end up costing people more in the long run, isn't it?
Oh, sure as hell it is. I mean, I don't see that. You know, they talk about lockdown until the end of this month of August, but I honestly don't think that's going to happen. We've got over 200 cases a day, generally speaking. We had 199 yesterday. We've got 240 today. We got 246 3 days ago. It's just increasing, and I don't see us getting out of this anytime soon.
But do you feel that the people of Sydney are taking it seriously enough? Because
no.
I know that when I was there at Christmas time and you had the outbreak on the northern beaches, like everyone was just carrying on like it was business as usual. And coming from where I came from, I felt really strange about it all.
Well, you know. You're, and we met, of course, around that time here in Bondi. No, I think the answer is no. I don't think people in Sydney take this nearly as seriously as the people in Melbourne. We have a lackadaisical approach, especially in Bondi. I mean, there was TV footage of Bondi Beach on all the networks last weekend, all the news networks, TV news networks, and they were just so many people on the beach. And I'm thinking, and also, like, if I try to go for, I don't go for a walk during the day here on Bondi because there's just too many people everywhere. I go for a walk at night when they've all gone home.
Yes.
Okay, we got to finish this soon. Just a quick note, I spoke to Adam, our other correspondent in Melbourne, about the census, which happens every 5 years. Just briefly, what do you think of the census?
I have never taken part in the census.
What? Henry.
Yes, I know.
How did you get away with that?
Well,
I think you have to do it.
I don't know, but when I was
I know.
A young adult,
I bet you're not on the electoral roll, right?
I was on the electoral roll, and then I don't want to say this on radio. I was on the electoral roll, and then the census happened, and I wasn't at my mother's house, and they removed me from the roll because of that. And when it's taken place, I've been overseas or not at home.
Well, you know, Melissa, there's nothing illegal about that. You know, that's fine. There's no problem with that.
Yeah, like previously you had to be in your place of residence on the evening to take part in it. Is that correct?
That is 100% correct. You have to be in your place of residence or else you don't get recorded.
Yes. Yeah. And I just never have been.
And you've been overseas for like nearly 20 years or something. You've been overseas
I've not been present for it. So I've never filled one out.
Right. Interesting. I didn't get asked until I went on the electoral roll in 2007 because I needed to be part of changing the government from John Howard, the Liberal Party, to...
Yes, well done.
And to the Labour Party, of course. But, you know, I the minute I went on the electoral roll, I was being called to court to jury duty, which I really didn't want to do that, Melissa. I didn't want to do it.
And have you managed to get out of it or not?
Yeah, I tried twice to get out of it. The third time, I was a dead duck, really. I had to do it. But I didn't get picked for jury, which was a fantastic thing. Okay, we must go. What's for dinner? What are you having for dinner?
I'm having a couple of pieces of salmon. Not smoked salmon, but it's some salmon because I'm in this apartment, and so I don't have my usual groceries.
Yes.
And I thought, okay, I've been in New Zealand. I need to diet. So I've been eating roast. You know how you buy those roast charcoal chickens from the supermarket?
I love the roast charcoal chickens from the supermarket.
So I brought one on Monday, and that's been my lunch for the last 3 days.
Right.
And then I brought some salmon, and that's my dinner. And it's great for the diet because I'm here. I don't have any snacks to snack on.
Mm, so that's good for the diet.
You know?
Okay.
Yes.
Well, look, thank you for spending over half an hour talking to me here on Bondi Tunes, Melissa.
Oh, it's great to speak to you, Henry.
This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio.
The news. I'm leaving today. I want to be a part of it. New York, New York. These vagabond shoes are longing to stray right through the very heart of it. New York, New York. I wanna wake up in a city that doesn't sleep and find I'm king of the hill, top of the heap. These little town blues are melting away. I'll make a brand new start of it in old New York. If I can make it there, I'll make it anywhere. It's up to you, New York, New York. New York, New York, city that never sleeps. And find I'm a number one, top of the list, king of the hill, a number one. These little town blues, oh, up to you. New York, New York, New York.
The sun never sets on Bondi Tunes.